Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we will talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. I just want to add a little bit of a warning to start off tonight's show. There is going to be a little bit of a trigger warning, as one of the stories that we are going to cover tonight may be very shocking, disturbing, and, needless to say, it may be the most disgusting story that we have covered so far on this podcast. Yeah, even worse than the Wander Franco story. So, listeners should be advised. Trigger warning. But not only will we cover that, we have the Royal Rumble that is also currently taking place, which we will discuss as well. We have the NFL head coaching carousel to get into, as well as the conference championships, which will be taking place this tomorrow, I should say, and more. But, Lou, I have a feeling you probably have a good idea which story I'm talking about here.
I think I do. I was coming on my show.
We may as well get to it because there was a Wall Street Journal story that came out a couple of days ago involving, and we have a, this isn't the first time we've talked about this guy on this podcast. Vincent Kennedy McMahon, the former owner of the WWE, and there has been officially a lawsuit filed against him, the WWE, and former WWE executive John Laurinaitis for sex trafficking, sexual assault, and emotional abuse. And that's just the beginning of it, folks. It's very, very disturbing, very disgusting, and we're going to get into the whole thing as well as the potential ramifications that the WWE, and I mean, let's face it, not just the company, but, we were wondering when the first story about Vince McMahon came out, Lou. We were wondering what was going to come, what was going to potentially come next.
Yeah, I also heard there was some reports of physical abuse as well.
Huh?
I also heard there was some physical abuse reports as well.
Yes, and obviously that's just one of them. That's just one of them that we're going to talk about. At the heart of this story, Janelle Grant is, and let me just say this right now. The stuff that we're going to say, parts of it are factual, parts of it are speculation. We're just giving our opinions on stuff that has been reported. Just for people who may listen to this and think that we're in the know. We are not in the know on this situation. So we're just basically speculating on stuff that has already been reported. Basically, Janelle Grant is a former employee of the WWE. She had spent some time employed with the WWE for, I believe, a couple of years. The last couple of years, she had signed a non-disclosure agreement back in 2022. But basically what happened was she has said in the lawsuit that she was abused as well as sexually exploited by Vince McMahon while he was the chief executive of World Wrestling Entertainment. She alleged that McMahon lured her with promises of career advancement, and then he allegedly exploited her and trafficked her to other men inside the company. Now, she had signed a non-disclosure agreement in 2022, in which McMahon agreed to pay her $3 million for her to not discuss their relationship or to disparage him. Her lawsuit claims that McMahon stopped making payments under the 2022 deal after the initial $1 million that he had paid her. The suit seeks to void that agreement, and it also seeks unspecified financial damages, though it doesn't say in particular how much. How much she is seeking. The lawsuit seeks a judgment that the NDA that she signed is invalid under state and federal law and compensatory and punitive damages under other laws, including the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. Let's see.
I heard $3 million, Steve.
Okay, so then she would basically
hello?
Be
what
seeking...
are we talking about? I just tuned in.
WWE is a major scandal.
Okay.
Yeah, we are talking about a lawsuit against the former owner of World Wrestling Entertainment, and it may be perhaps the most disgusting story that we have discussed on this podcast. So a statement from her lawyer, Ann Callis, was released saying today's complaint seeks to hold...
This is the wrestler in question.
We said Vince McMahon, the owner former owner of the WWE.
Who has a lawsuit against Vince McMahon is my question.
A former employee.
A former employee who I believe was employed somewhere around, I think it was like 2020 to 2022 or something like that.
Okay.
So the statement reads that today's complaint seeks to hold accountable two WWE executives who sexually assaulted and trafficked plaintiff Janelle Grant, as well as the organization that facilitated or turned a blind eye to the abuse and then swept it under the rug. She is an incredibly private and courageous person who has suffered deeply at the hands of Mr. McMahon and Mr. Laurinaitis. Ms. Grant hopes that her lawsuit will prevent other women from being victimized. The organization is well aware of Mr. McMahon's history of depraved behavior, and it's time that they take responsibility for the misconduct of its leadership. The lawsuit describes in graphic detail her account of her interactions with McMahon. And once again, another trigger warning here for anybody listening, because it's going to get very nasty. Some of the stuff that is discussed here. Notably, Vince was most aggressive when using the certain sex toys that he named after male WWE wrestlers and performers. McMahon named the sex toys so that the color of the toy matched the race of the wrestler. So, for example, a black dildo that he used on her would be named after an African-American wrestler, and a white dildo would be named after a Caucasian wrestler. In addition to McMahon's infatuation with pretending that other men, and namely certain WWE talent, were in the room with them, This was yet another incremental step in desensitizing Miss Grant to his fantasy and eventual demands that she perform sexual acts for and or have sexual contact with others within the WWE. As one example of his extreme depravity, on May 9th, 2020, he defecated on Miss Grant during a threesome and then commanded her to continue pleasuring his friend with feces in her hair and running down her back while McMahon went to the bathroom to shower off. Upon his return from the bathroom, McMahon and his friend actively resumed the threesome, which lasted over an hour and a half, while Miss Grant remained covered in McMahon's filth. When McMahon's friend ended up leaving, McMahon ordered her to stay and to continue to sexually gratify him. In June of 2021, McMahon and defendant John Laurinaitis sexually assaulted Miss Grant inside Laurinaitis' office in WWE headquarters while colleagues were busy at their desks. Behind a locked door, the two men cornered her and pulled her in between them, forcibly touched her before ultimately putting her on top of a table between them. She begged them to stop, but they then forced themselves on her, each taking turns restraining her for the other while saying no means yes and take it, bitch. In March 2020, McMahon began sharing sexually explicit photographs and videos of Miss Grant, including pornographic content that he recorded personally with other men both inside and outside the company, including members of the television production tech team, as they call it, as well as other executives, producers, and a world-famous athlete and former UFC heavyweight champion with whom WWE was actively trying to sign to a new contract and ultimately did sign that contract. And in particular, that athlete in question, they're not explicitly named, but there's only one WWE wrestler that had gone on to become UFC heavyweight champion, and that was Brock Lesnar. So it's obvious that is who they're talking about in this situation. And in particular, Brock had supposedly requested as part of the terms of signing a new deal, Brock had requested that she send or that she make nude photos and videos of herself for Brock in particular. And one of the videos was to include a video of her urinating.
Right.
Yeah.
I have, just to put this out there, I have no idea why this even occurred, but apparently she did it.
How?
And there's all. She was also threatened that if she didn't do, or if she resisted in any way, that her job would that she would basically lose her job, which was a very high paying job. Then during a encounter on May 18th, 2019, Miss Grant felt coerced into engaging in sexual activity and that McMahon had trapped her in an impossible situation as she feared adverse career and personal consequences and legal retaliation if she declined his advances. McMahon stated, "This is what I have been waiting for," as he performed oral sex on her. She then asked that protection be used, and McMahon responded that there was no need to worry because he was quote-unquote clean. Feeling that she was being used for his gratification, Ms. Grant went numb and was unable to make eye contact. McMahon then flipped on his back and said, okay, jack him off. On March 26th of 2020, McMahon sent a lengthy message to Ms. Grant describing in detail the circumstances surrounding sharing explicit photographs of her to a former WWE referee. McMahon described how the WWE referee left to masturbate and told Ms. Grant she had made a perfect stranger very happy. McMahon had become the most important figure in Ms. Grant's life as he meticulously asserted power and control over almost every aspect of it from that duration of time. Ms. Grant's fears intensified over the consequences that could result from McMahon's actions, particularly by sharing her naked pictures. She became paranoid, completely dependent on, and worshipfully devoted to McMahon before she ultimately was signed to the non-disclosure agreement and let go from the company. Now, there's obviously more stuff, which I will not get into. Since this story came out, Vince McMahon has officially resigned from his role as a member of the board of directors of TKO. So he is officially gone from not just that company, but from the WWE in general. He also released a statement that, in particular, if I can find it here real quickly, he released a statement in the middle of last night's show, because last night they had WWE SmackDown. He released a statement saying, I stand by my prior statement that Ms. Grant's lawsuit is replete with lies, obscene, made-up instances that never occurred, and is a vindictive distortion of the truth. I intend to vigorously defend myself against these baseless accusations and look forward to clearing my name. However, out of respect for the WWE Universe, the extraordinary TKO business, and its board members and shareholders, partners and constituents, and all of the employees and superstars who helped to make WWE into the global leader it is today, I have decided to resign from my executive chairmanship and the TKO board of directors effective immediately. Now, normally you would think, okay, innocent until proven guilty. But apparently there have been multiple former stars who have come out since this news broke. And apparently they have basically, one of them in particular, Ryback, who was a former member of the WWE roster about 10 years ago, basically said that this is just the beginning of the stories that you're going to see come out about Vince, and all of them are 100% true. Basically referring to Vince as maybe the most evil man he has ever looked eye to eye with.
Do you think if he wasn't guilty, he wouldn't step down?
You know, I still think he would have stepped down anyways, because you look at it this way. Slim Jim had pulled their sponsorship from the WWE Royal Rumble once this news came out. The longer that Vince, and they said specifically the reason why they did it was because of this news. When you look at it from a business perspective, the longer that Vince stays with that Vince stays with the company, the more damage it was going to do.
Oh yeah, I didn't think Slim Jim was a sponsor anymore.
Yeah. Well, they had just hooked back up with WWE over the past year or two. And by the way, speaking of which, since this news broke and Vince stepped down, Slim Jim did officially unpause their sponsorship. So they are officially sponsoring the Royal Rumble tonight. But I mean, Lou, one would have to think that, this has to be the final nail in the coffin of Vince, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. This is Judgment Day for him. I mean, no human has the right to do that. I mean, and now, this is going to really serve as a black eye to the WWE. I mean, it's going to go down in flames. There's going to be, and I think there was also another lawsuit that was even issued today. So he's in more hot shit than he was 24 hours ago. I mean, it's going to be like an ongoing soap opera for, like the next, at least maybe the next year or so. I mean, this does not look good for Vince McMahon and the WWE in general. Say it again, Di.
Didn't Vince McMahon used to use the publisher's clearing house commercials?
No, that's Ed McMahon. No relation. Nice try.
Okay.
There's no relation between the two. He basically what happened was his his dad, Vincent J. McMahon, he owned the WWF back when it was the WWWF.
Right.
He then passed it down.
WWF, Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
The Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
Was that any good? Sorry, I do not follow wrestling.
Yes, back in the day, that was good. Back in the 50s and 60s, wrestling was very popular.
Okay.
And then when Cena retired, Vince took over and made it into a global phenomenon.
Right. Now it's not a phenomenon anymore.
No, now it's going to be in the tank.
Right.
Hang on just one second. I believe we have Chris. Is this you?
Yeah, it's me.
Oh, hi, Chris.
How's it going, Chris? It's been a long time.
It's been a minute. How y'all doing?
All right.
Doing good. We have Lou and we have Diane on the line with us. I'm pretty sure your dad is going to join us at some point tonight as well.
Thanks,
Chris. I'm pretty sure you're aware of the Vince McMahon stuff that has come out.
Me and my dad have been talking about it.
I want to get your thoughts on it because it almost makes you wonder if this is just one story of many years, maybe decades of stuff that may have been going on within that company.
I believe it has been going on for a while because he's so sick in a minute.
Mm.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was actually rewatching one of the promos that he did back. Do you remember when he feuded with Stephanie McMahon? Back in 2003. And he made this sort of, Stephanie made this sort of comment to him about never forgiving him for what he made her do to his friends. during business meetings. And it really made me wonder, was that actually, was that not storyline and that actually part truth to where, maybe Stephanie, he had actually used Stephanie in basically the same way that he used this other woman?
Possibly. It could happen.
I'm sure it will.
But, Chris, what impact do you think this might have on the WWE? Because we saw that, obviously he has stepped down already. But we already saw that they lost the Slim Jim sponsorship before. I think
yep.
Slim Jim officially put themselves back on earlier today. But do you think there might be other issues that might rise up because of this?
I think there are a lot of more issues going to pop up after this.
It is by far maybe the most repulsive story I think I have probably read. And I thought the initial accusations against him were bad enough. But now finding out that Brock Lesnar is part of it, and who knows how many other WWE superstars might be involved.
And Brock got a wife.
Right.
Oh,
a smoking hot wife, might I add.
That makes it even worse.
Hell, Vince is even and that makes it worse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. And actually... One of the other things that I didn't mention earlier was the fact that his wife Linda had apparently found out about it. Partially why they haven't been living together apparently in years. Vince and Linda, they've technically been separated. And matter of fact, I read something earlier today as well that said, according to Wade Keller of PW Illustrated, I think, or whatever that big wrestling site is, basically said that he isn't even allowed to see his own granddaughters anymore.
Okay.
It's just this whole entire story has basically blown the company out of the water, essentially. So, it just makes you wonder. It makes you wonder what's next. I think it's entirely possible that we could potentially see more people be tossed as a result of this, especially those who are connected to Vince.
Oh, I think there are going to be many more people get caught with this shit.
Mm-hmm.
John Laurinaitis, who is married to the Bella Twins, to the mother of the Bella Twins, and he's one of the ones that was involved with this. It almost makes you wonder the rumors that were brought up about Macho Man Randy Savage and Stephanie McMahon. Something that everybody had joked whether or not it was true or not, that you know, Macho Man Randy Savage had a relationship with Stephanie McMahon when she was a teenager. You know, it almost makes you wonder now if there wasn't some truth behind those behind that story.
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, obviously there's probably going to be more that's going to come out about this. I guarantee you that, you know, there's just no way that Vince is going to be able to recover from this, essentially. It was already bad enough that, you know, he had to give up the majority ownership of the company by selling it. But now, you know, there's no workaround to where, oh, if he's found innocent or whatnot of this, there's no workaround that he can utilize in order to bring himself back to the company. He's officially 100% gone now, which, you know, who knows? Maybe that'll be what's best for the business. That maybe he will be fully gone for good this time.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming back.
Yeah, no, I would be very surprised.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, if anything, it's already bad enough, you know, the story as it is. But this may actually force some of those other people who are, you know, if he stopped paying this woman money as part of the NDA, it makes you wonder how many other victims did he stop paying money to who had similar NDAs. So it definitely is a story that we're gonna have to keep a very close eye on, because otherwise it's entirely possible that the more news comes out about this, it could potentially damage the WWE brand itself, even though he is officially separated from the brand right now. He's such a huge part of its history.
Yeah, but there's enough damage already.
I mean, they're going to damage the brand even more.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, he's such a huge part of their history.
Yes.
That, you know, I'll draw a little similarity back to Chris Benoit. When Chris Benoit, for those who don't remember him, he was a former professional wrestler for World Championship Wrestling as well as World Wrestling Entertainment. He ended up passing away after he committed suicide in 2007 following his murders of both his wife and son, before he killed himself right after committing those acts. And because of that, WWE basically scrubbed him from their entire history. So his name is never mentioned. I mean, you know, his matches, the videos that they have of his matches are still up on the network, but because he was very prominently featured, you know, on WWE programming. What's it called? He was so prominently featured on WWE programming over the 2000s that they basically had to remove every single mention of his name on WWE programming. They removed all merchandise. They removed any sort of contract he may have had remaining with the company. And now we've seen with Vince McMahon, it's even deeper with Vince McMahon because Vince McMahon has owned the company since like the 70s. Mm. So, and not to mention he was a prominent figure of the Attitude Era from the 90s all the way up to, I mean, he was a prominent figure on screen all the way from like the 90s to about, or actually no, maybe the mid to late 80s all the way up to just recently, like 2021, 2022.
Right.
So, you know, if he were to be Chris Benoit, as we call it, where he gets, where his name is basically permanently erased from the company in general, and also any merchandise that they were selling of him, might I add, has officially been scrubbed from the company.
Yeah.
So, like everything has been completely scrapped. You know, it's like, that's a gigantic chunk of the WWE's history right there that is in danger of basically being removed from their from their own history. Because, I mean, think about it. If it wasn't for Vince McMahon, not just the executive, but the on-screen character, Stone Cold Steve Austin may not have gotten as big of a character as he became with the, he may not have gotten as over with the fans because of him going, rebelling against ownership, as part of his character. So, however, though, it is necessary for the WWE to take these sort of actions because you got to remember, they have sponsors that they have to deal with now. They're a publicly traded company. You know, there's just, there's way too much stuff. There's just way too much stuff that's at stake. And I think TKO kind of saw this coming, though, because, you know, it seemed like they were sort of forcing him out of the picture to where this last half year or so, ever since TKO officially bought the WWE, Vince has not been in charge.
Right.
His son-in-law, Paul Levesque, or as WWE fans know him as Triple H, he's been the one that's been in charge on the WWE side, you know, these last few years. So McMahon, if anything, was more of a figurehead at this point in his life. And I mean, obviously this is going to go to court. Odds are this is going to go to court, and who knows what else may be uncovered through discovery once they get to the court portion of this whole situation. But, I mean, regardless, this could be, depending on what else comes out, this could be very damaging to the company overall. And, you know, speaking of the Royal Rumble, which I had mentioned earlier, the Royal Rumble is currently taking place right now at Tropicana Field in Tampa Bay, Florida. We have had one. We have had one match already take place, the Women's Royal Rumble that saw Bayley last an hour and 3 minutes, as well as an hour and 3 minutes and 3 seconds to win the Royal Rumble after coming in out of number three out of 30 other or out of 29 other wrestlers, 30 wrestlers total. Bayley wins. While also seeing the return of former WWE Women's Champion Naomi after being gone from the company for about a year or so, as well as the debut of Jade Cargill, who formerly was with All Elite Wrestling earlier this year before she signed with the WWE. She had a pretty good debut for herself, eliminating two opponents, as well as seeing a cross brand or a cross company partnership sort of between WWE and TNA, as the TNA Knockouts champion Jordynne Grace was also brought into the Royal Rumble this year. Currently, we are in the middle of the Fatal 4-Way match for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship, with Roman Reigns defending his title against Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and LA Knight. Still to come, we have the Men's Royal Rumble match, and we also have Logan Paul defending his United States Championship against Kevin Owens. Who knows what other surprises may be in store. We've already seen a couple of surprises so far with the Women's Royal Rumble, so who knows what the Men's Royal Rumble will have in store. We do have some other stories to cover here. Before we move on from wrestling, actually, I forgot to mention this. The Vince McMahon story. This comes on the heels of WWE announcing their new television deal with Netflix for WWE Raw beginning in January 2025. WWE Raw beginning in January of 2025 will air on Netflix for the next 10 years. And the deal is for $5 million annually, which if you do the math, That equals $5 billion total that the WWE is getting in this deal. So it kind of makes you wonder, you know, with the timing of stories being put out there. Moving on, though, over to the NHL, we have, well, quite frankly, the story doesn't really get any better, but five players from Canada's 2018 World Junior team have taken a leave of absence from their current clubs in recent days amid a report that five members of that team have been asked to surrender to police to face sexual assault charges. Mm. Among those players are NHL players Michael McLeod and Cal Foote of the New Jersey Devils, Carter Hart of the Philadelphia Flyers, Dylan Dubé of the Calgary Flames, and also former NHL player Alex Formenton, who is now with a team in Europe. All have been granted indefinite leave, with the absences having been announced over the past couple of days. The Flyers and Swiss club HC Ambry Piota cited personal reasons for the leaves of both Hart and Formenton. Also, the Swiss club said that Formenton has been allowed to return to Canada. The Flames had cited Dubé's mental health as a reason for him stepping away, and the Devils did not give a reason on Wednesday in announcing why McLeod and Foot were on leave. Messages left for the agents representing all five players and multiple messages sent to Hart's lawyer seeking comment were not immediately returned. and the NHL Players Association declined to comment on the situation. Now, the reason why this is coming up is because London, Ontario police launched an investigation in 2022 after word emerged that Hockey Canada had settled a lawsuit with a woman who said she was sexually assaulted by eight members of that gold medal winning team at a gala. The Globe and Mail, citing unnamed sources, reported Wednesday that five players from that team were asked to surrender to police in the city halfway between Toronto and Detroit to face charges of sexual assault. A spokesperson for London police would not confirm the report when contacted by the Associated Press. Basically, they said when there's an update to provide, we will share with the media outlets. London police did announce Wednesday that they would be holding a news conference on February 5th to share further details in relation to a sexual assault investigation dating back to 2018. Earlier in the day, Flyers general manager Daniel Briere opened his mid-season State of the Organization press conference by saying, "We are aware of this morning's press reports on a very serious matter. We will respond appropriately when the outcomes of the investigations are made public." The NHL has been very clear that teams should refer all investigation-related questions to them. In the meantime, members of the organization, including Flyers players, will not be commenting any further. That is all we can say on at the moment, unfortunately. The NHL, meanwhile, had opened their own investigation back in 2022, and they had pledged to make those findings public. The Deputy Commissioner, Bill Daly, told the Associated Press by email on Wednesday that the league would issue a statement when it is appropriate, adding that there was nothing more that he could currently say. Back in June at the Stanley Cup Final, Daly had said an independent investigator had completed work and he expected a report by mid-summer that the league would then review. Basically, he also stated, "We have been in contact with the London police, continue to want to be in contact with them, make sure that there's visibility with respect to what our process is. And to the extent we can understand what theirs is, that would be the goal, and then I can't prejudge what happens from there." So, I mean, this is, you know, Hockey Canada, they had made wholesale changes after the independent report came out, and they lost major sponsors in nearly 2 years since this, and also other scandals had emerged. Their CEO, Scott Smith, was ousted, and the board of directors also resigned in October 2022, related to how Hockey Canada had handled their sexual assault allegations and how it paid out settlements. Even Nike last year had ended their partnership with the organization after earlier pausing it, along with other sponsors, given the heavy criticism of Hockey Canada's leadership. So, I mean, Lou, this just seems, I don't know if there's been any other updates on it, but, you know, this is a very disturbing story that has come out in the NHL, and you know, you could almost, it would be fair to question whether or not these players' careers may be over.
Well, I've been imagining it over, you know, with the allegations and the action setup. I would not be surprised if their careers are over, you know, very shortly, probably as we speak. I mean, because you can't get away with this kind of stuff.
This needs to happen in every single sport.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously they may be facing jail time potentially because of this. And also, this would actually be pretty damaging for the Calgary Flames, as Dylan Dubé, you know, he's been one of their key secondary contributors the last couple of seasons. So, I mean, this would be pretty damaging to them. Cal Foote, you know, he's basically been essentially a depth defenseman, so to speak, for the New Jersey Devils, who he had just signed with, might I add, this past off season. Fermenton obviously has been out of the organization, but he has been out of the majors for some time now. Michael McLeod, you know, he's got 10 goals for the Devils this year. So yeah. he's a young center that it could be, honestly, it could be devastating for their depth if he ends up, if they end up losing him. But I mean, obviously, you know, there's more important matters at hand when it comes to this.
Yes.
And Carter Hart, meanwhile, I mean, Carter Hart is Philadelphia's starting goaltender.
Okay.
And we saw what happened to Philly today against the Boston Bruins, losing 6-2. They were being outscored 5-0 in the first period, in the second period. The Bruins had scored 4 goals on their starting goaltender today, and then within a minute of the second period beginning, the Bruins then scored their 5th goal. Philadelphia's goaltending has essentially fallen apart since Carter Hart ended up having to leave the team. So, I mean, this has impacts not just to the individuals involved, but also the team.
Right.
I mean, what are your thoughts on this, Lou?
With all many people in there, and you know, all getting called out, that is really going to cause some serious damage. Their careers are really, you know, really finished. That's really damaging their careers, and not just their personal life too. I mean, now you're gonna have a criminal record. You know, don't these people know?
Right.
These players know how damage they can do to their careers and to themselves too, without thinking. Does anybody think anymore before they think of doing anything stupid? You got your career to think about, you got your family to think about, and whatnot. You know, and you go up and pull, you know, a stupid, ridiculous act like this. People just don't understand that you have consequences for your actions.
And also, might I add, there's one player that has not been, there's one player that has not been mentioned in this story, but has been rumored, that is Cale Makar the Colorado Avalanche.
Yes.
Now, it's not confirmed whether or not he was involved, but he was on that 2018 World Juniors team.
Yes.
It's worth mentioning. I mean, imagine if a star like him ends up being involved. I mean, that could be very disastrous, if anything, for the league, considering the fact that he's considered to be one of the young rising stars, not to mention a Stanley Cup champion as well.
You were a rising star. Now you have this shit happening.
Well, like I said, it's not confirmed that he was... What was that, Diane?
It happens in every sport, though, not just hockey.
Yeah, I know.
True. But I mean, it does happen in every sport. Yeah, it does happen in every sport, but at the same time, though, you know, this is I think that, you know, this just goes further because of the fact that a whole entire country is involved. I mean, it would be one thing if it was just one player from one team, but, you know, this is five players all from Team Canada. You know, this, and not to mention considering all the other negative publicity that Team Canada has had the last couple of years with all the turnover and everything that they've experienced, you know, it just looks even worse.
Mm-hmm. Right. Who won the Devils Lightning game?
Devils, sorry.
Devils won. Oh, the Devils won?
No, Lightning.
Okay.
Yeah, Lightning won 6-3, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Huh? I'm a Devils fan.
Yeah, some of the other scores from today's games, Dallas with a 5-4 victory over the Capitals in overtime. The Oilers with a 4-1 victory over Predators. The Sabres with a 5-2. How much in a row?
16.
Oh, wow.
Disgusting.
Let's see. The Sabres 5-2 over the San Jose Sharks. The Hurricanes with a 3-1 victory over the Arizona Coyotes. The Rangers 7-2 over the Ottawa Senators. In overtime, the Pittsburgh Penguins with a 3-2 victory over the Montreal Canadiens. The Maple Leafs with a 4-2 victory over the Winnipeg Jets. Games that are still ongoing, the Florida Panthers with a 2-1 lead over the New York Islanders. Let's see. The Detroit Red Wings with a 3-2 lead over the Golden Knights in the third period, about 17 minutes left in the third there. In the first intermission in Minnesota, the Wild have a 2-1 lead over the Anaheim Ducks. And just about to get underway, the Calgary Flames host the Chicago Blackhawks, and the Vancouver Canucks host the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Well, with the Blackhawks, that could be an easy victory.
Yeah, although I don't know, though. You know, the Blackhawks, I mean, obviously, you know, it'll be an easy – it won't be a victory for the Blackhawks, considering
– right.
Everybody that they're missing.
The Blackhawks? I thought it was the Blue Jackets.
No, the Blackhawks are worse. The Blackhawks suck.
Who are they playing?
Blackhawks are playing.
They are playing. Hang on. Flames. Let me find. They're playing the Calgary Flames.
Okay.
Way about now.
And this just in from the Royal.
Where are the Rangers playing?
Hold on.
They already won.
7-2.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they
okay.
won. Yeah, they won 7-2 over the Ottawa Senators.
Okay.
This just in from the Royal Rumble. Roman Reigns has successfully defended his WWE Universal Championship against AJ Styles, LA Knight, and Randy Orton, officially putting his championship reign, let me make sure I have the right number here, officially marking his championship reign as 1,241 days as of tomorrow, which means, well, actually, let me see. Where will he be when it comes to Hogan? When it comes to Hogan, let's see. He'll probably be close to Hulk Hogan's record, actually. Let me see. Okay, I'm going to have to go all the way. Wait a minute. I'm going to have to go all the way back to. Okay, Hogan's record is 1,474. So Roman Reigns still has quite a little bit left to go before he passes Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, that's almost going to be untouchable.
But if he if he's going to potentially pass Dammartino, though, he'll have to hold the title for like another 8 years, more than likely. Let's see. Well, in Major League Baseball, we did officially have the Hall of Fame inductees be announced this year, and we have three new inductees into the MLB Hall of Fame class of 2024. Adrian Beltre with 95.1% of the vote, he gets in on the first ballot. Joe Mauer with 76.1% barely gets in. Honestly, I'm kind of surprised considering the fact that his number, before it was officially announced, his number was actually a lot higher than 76.1%. And Todd Helton of the Colorado Rockies gets in at 79.7%. just falling short by 5 votes, Billy Wagner of the New York Mets, 73.8% of the vote, just fell short by 5 votes. Surely he will get in his final year of candidacy.
With 422 saves, I think that's a cause for a legit candidate to make the Hall of Fame. So whoever this committee is, I think they need to do their homework more because, some of these players who are good, I think they got cheated. I think they should have got in.
Right, I agree. I think he has the numbers.
He does.
I think he has the numbers worthy of it. I do know one of the writers only voted 2 people in, and that was Manny Ramirez and Alex Rodriguez.
Right.
And the reason being is he believed that steroid users should make it in regardless of if they took steroids or not, which, it was a bullshit excuse to be used.
Well, then if you can do that, then I think you can let Pete Rose in too.
Yeah, but at the same time, I understand the point that using steroids, obviously it basically cheapens the game. It cheapens their careers, so to speak. Which is why Gary Sheffield fell short. It's why Gary Sheffield fell short with 63.9% in his final year. Some of the other names that didn't make it in, Andrew Jones, he saw a significant leap, 61.6%. Through 7 years on the ballot. I would not be surprised if he is potentially in consideration next year. Carlos Beltran, in his second year of eligibility, Carlos Beltran finished with 57.1% of the vote. Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez both, I believe they both kind of fell a little bit. Rodriguez had 34.8%. Manny Ramirez had 32.5%. Chase Utley, yeah, not bad for a first year on the ballot, 28.8%. Meanwhile, Omar Vizquel, only 17.7%, only 3 years left for him. He's probably not going to make it.
Bobby some might rely on the Veterans Committee.
Well, he possibly could with the Veterans Committee, yeah.
Yeah.
I would assume that Sheffield will probably make it with the Veterans Committee.
Yeah.
The only reason why he didn't make it was because of his affiliation with Barry Bonds, essentially.
There
that
you
was
go.
That's pretty much strike. The only reason why he didn't make it.
Yeah, strike one.
Well, let's bring Alex onto the show. Alex, welcome. We have been discussing the Hall of Fame inductees for this year in Major League Baseball. Adrian Beltre with 95.1%, Todd Helton with 79.7%, and Joe Mauer with 76.1% all made it. Billy Wagner with 73.8% missed by only 5 votes.
Wow. Yeah.
All right. Well, what are your thoughts, Alex, on our inductees this year?
I really, no brainer. Like, I really thought the first two were shoo-ins, and I know Mauer was supposed to be like a transcendent talent, like the best catcher in decades, and then he really got ravaged by injuries. And I know we spoke about it a couple of months ago, you, me, and Lou, but Mauer was the one for me still. I was kind of like, eh. Like, he was started incredible and had all this incredible hype. But, and Lou, you remember that too. I mean, he was more, early 90s, I think, mid-90s. But like
mid-90s.
Yeah, but, like, his stats really, I don't want to say fell off a cliff, but he went from, like, you know, Piazza or better power to literally 7 or 8 – or 9 home runs a year for like at least half of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And then he played forever, and they're like, all right, Hall of Famer. I'm like, like half of his career was like night and day. It was two different stats, like two different baseball cards almost. So his stats really went south for like the whole second half of his career. So I'm honestly surprised if he hadn't been injured so much. I'm not trying to like really diss the guy, but like injuries made it, because there's a lot of other guys that, I mean, I'm a Mets guy, but like David Wright, his career, there's many more from plenty of teams, but Mauer was decimated by injuries. I'm surprised he made it in, because his stats really went south for like at least half a decade to close out his career.
Yeah, at the same point though, they said on MLB Network, when you compare his stats to other catchers in the Hall of Fame, he actually had very comparable stats compared to other catchers that are in the Hall.
And that makes sense. I'm not like, you know, totally bent out of shape about it. That's just the one that kind of, I was a little bit like, oh, wow. Okay. That kind of just took me back a little bit, but yeah. And again, he was an awesome player. It's just, I think it was back injury, but really just totally drained his power for like half a decade. But yeah, I guess overall,
right,
for the historically, yeah. Yeah, you know, I think it's cool when hardworking guys, he was a very popular, you know, he was like Mr. Twin for a while. He was like the face of the franchise for a decade. So yeah, that's just surprising a little bit. Beltre was incredible. 17, 18 years. He was maybe not even incredible, but just longevity being very, very good.
Right.
You know, being the top 3 or 4, maybe a top 3 or 4 third baseman. I don't even know if he ever won an MVP off the top of my head, but he was always like, you know, in the all-star mix every year. And just over time, you know, his consistency gave him the invite in, I think. And you said Helton too?
Yep.
Yeah. He was really like the face of the Rockies for a long time, back when they had Larry Walker. So Helton, yeah, I mean, consistent 300 hitter, really good player. The one thing with them though, and I don't know if you guys agree, but it's always Rockies with me. It's like, yeah, how good would he have done if he was, you know, when he was 21 years old, if he was coming up on like the Red Sox or the Yankees or anywhere but Colorado, because that would just literally inflate stats. inflate stats like nobody's business. So there's always kind of that Colorado, you know, it's like a, whatever you call it, like he gets like extra credit, yeah. extra Colorado points on the back of his baseball card to every statistical category. So I don't know. That would be interesting maybe to look at home and away stats. But, yeah, the guy had just kick-ass, killer stats. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised that he got in either.
And not just that, but what about Wagner missing it by 4 or 5 votes?
Yeah, really popular, really bad, like a really tough, you know, prototypical, really tough, intimidating closer. Closers just have a harder time besides Mariano Rivera. I mean, who else has gotten in recently? I mean, they have a lot of tougher time.
Rivera is the only one I really remember.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Dennis Eckersley, but yeah, I mean, I think that's just a position that the Hall just really doesn't like to get in, and I don't know. I definitely don't agree with it, but yeah, wasn't that his first time? Maybe his first go-around? Because I'm confident he can hopefully eventually get in.
Well, it's he has only one more opportunity next year.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Wow. So time's ticking for him. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah. I mean, I think to me, he's a Hall of Famer. He was that good and that dominant at his respective position for a long time. So maybe the last time around they get him in. Who knows? We'll see what the writers and all the voters say. But yeah, I would have liked to see him get in. But, yeah, closers always have an uphill climb trying to get in.
Yeah. Hopefully he's probably going to get in. I would assume that Gary Sheffield may get in by the Veterans Committee. Considering, you know, it's funny I talk about Sheffield. Obviously, we know about him and the steroids. But he was actually, throughout the whole process, he was basically right on the borderline of 75% the entire time that ballots were being, were being revealed and everything, bit by bit. So it was kind of surprising to see him drop off by as much as he did, only getting like 63% of the vote at the end of it all. Considering he was basically staying around 75%, just barely. I believe the last I had seen, he was at like 74.1% before they officially revealed who was actually getting in.
Yeah, I'm partial. I mean, he's one of my favorites. I used to love watching that guy just punish the ball. He was like just a dangerous, violent hitter. He was fun. He was very intimidating. But, yeah, I noticed that. His numbers just I thought he was going to get in personally. I don't know what you guys think. I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I agree.
Thank you.
Yeah, just I think he'll get it in. I think he'll get in through the Veterans Committee at some point.
Yeah. He bounced around. He played 5 or 6 games. But, yeah, he's had a hell of a career.
You know, another player that they said they brought up when they were talking about Joe Mauer, they said, okay, Joe Mauer gets in, but then you probably have players like Jorge Posada with the careers they had, and then they look back at their careers and they say, wait a minute, so he got in, but yet I didn't?
That's what I mean. That's the slippery slope with Mauer. And I think Posada's a Hall of Famer, personally. But, yeah, I had a problem with Mauer. He was hitting like seven or eight or nine home runs for like 5 or 6 years in a row, playing a lot, too. It's not like he had one bad year and then retires. So I was just confused by Mauer. Again, injuries suck. I'm not blaming it on him, but his stats. End of the day, his stats were just, if you look at his stats, they're not, they don't scream Hall of Fame to me. Posada had a hell of a lot more
power. No, I agree.
Posada had rings. Posada had a heck of a lot more power. I don't know if he had enough awesome seasons, but I mean, to me, Posada, like, historically a better career than Mauer, I think.
Mm.
better stats.
I thought that Maurer, honestly, I thought he was going to be first ballot.
Okay.
When it comes to Maurer, I thought he was going to be first ballot. You also have to take into account, I believe they said something like he's the only catcher to have won multiple batting titles, I believe they said. Wait a minute.
Yeah, multiple.
I'm trying to remember what it was. It was either batting titles or, yeah, I think he's the only catcher to be a 3-time batting champion.
Wow. Yeah, maybe the end of the career just is tarnishing his. Maybe it's making me a little bit too critical of him. I mean, that is an amazing feat. Yeah, I'm glad he got in. I've always just had a little question about him injuries, but I hope more guys can get in, even if they end on a tougher note. Yeah, we'll see if Sheffield can get in next year.
Yeah, he might get in. He might get in just like Fred McGriff. Obviously, with Fred McGriff,
yeah,
it took him quite a bit with the Veterans Committee, but eventually he ended up getting in. So it could be the same thing for Sheffield too.
Yeah.
Fred
McGriff, crime dog.
But anyways, we do have some other. We do have some signings from around the league. The LA Dodgers, or the LA Deferrals, as I like to call them. They signed Red Sox starting pitcher James Paxton to a 1-year, $12 million deal. Yeah, that's too much for John Henry to spend on a single player. Basically, Paxton will probably be either a depth starter, or he may end up being the fifth starter in LA's rotation. But needless to say, you know, the Dodgers, we might as well, like I've said multiple times, on paper, you might as well just hand the World Series over to the LA Dodgers and let's move on for, you know, let's cancel the season, essentially.
Yeah, our only hope is MLB, MLB fans worldwide, our greatest, the secret weapon.
Yeah.
We can beat them from within, from the inside. Dave Roberts.
Yeah.
The manager can be undoing. Hopefully fumbles.
Yeah, one would hope.
A choke job. Bets hit in seventh or something. That guy's some outlandish moves. I'm shocked they haven't replaced him with all, especially now that they have like this dream team assortment of talent. I would think they would get someone like I don't know, anyone but that guy. But that's like the managerial. Yeah, you're right. If they're healthy, if he really botches things up, maybe they don't worth it.
And by the way, speaking of the Red Sox, they held winter weekend last week, and Sox management was met with a chorus of boos last week while Craig Breslow, of course, ended up getting cheers, because the Red Sox fans know that it's not his fault that he's being dealt with a shit hand by managers, or I mean by ownership. But apparently the Red Sox are interested in Ryan Stanek as well as a couple of other relievers for some reason on the market, even though they don't need relievers, they need starters, but whatever,
yeah.
I suppose. The Milwaukee Brewers, they signed first baseman Rhys Hoskins to a 2-year, $34 million deal. Honestly, that's actually a pretty good contract considering he's coming off of a torn ACL this past season in his left knee. So he moves from Philly to Milwaukee, and as part of the deal, it includes a player opt-out after this season. However, it also includes a mutual option for the 2026 season. So, technically, this could turn into a 3-year, $51 million deal, depending on if that mutual option gets exercised. in my opinion, you know, not really a bad signing for the Milwaukee Brewers, assuming that Rhys Hoskins can fully recover from his torn ACL, and he ends up being, you know, anywhere close to the same batter that he was before the injury. However, though, I believe it's a pretty big loss, though, for the Phillies offensively.
Yeah.
When you consider the power in his bat.
Well, I mean, they've had historic – they had – I don't know. They moved right to first, and they've added Trey Turner. They kind of moved on. But I'm happy for Hoskins, though, because he seems like a good dude. And when he's healthy, he can be a really good power hitter. And Milwaukee really doesn't get these big names, so I think it's – I'm happy that the Brewers can get him.
So it's a small
good place for him to
kind
of resurrect his career. Good place for him to land and, like, come back and kind of get his revenge and show that he's healthy.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's definitely an opportunity that, especially with him having an opt-out after the first year, it's an opportunity that maybe perhaps he could, you know, he could basically bet on himself for this year, and he could essentially, you know, he could pull a Justin Turner, and if he puts on you know, an excellent performance this year, he could basically find himself in line for another payday, you know, next off season.
I know Turner's a free agent now. Did Turner opt out himself, or did the Sox say they didn't want him?
Yeah.
Which one was it?
No, he opted out himself.
God, he's really popular. That'd be a perfect one more year with that guy for them. They just – that's bad. That's tough news.
Well, honestly, though, Alex, I mean, it's not really much of a surprise to me that he opted out because, you know, he was making – considering the numbers he put up this year, he's in line for a payday. He's in line for more money than – I think he was only making like $6 million.
Yeah, and plus if they're not – if they're showing everyone that
that's not a lot of money.
Turner wants to go somewhere where they're spending big bucks on people. He's probably pissed like a lot of the players with the Sox ownership. He wants to finish off, you know, on a contender. Sox should be a contender if they were spending money. So Turner's probably like, you know what? Get me somewhere else. Turner's in his twilight of his career.
However, he did not rule out a return, though.
Interesting.
And the Red Sox are still in on him, and they're still in on Adam Duvall as well, in bringing back Adam Duvall. The Duvall sweepstakes are apparently between the Red Sox and the Angels. And as far as Turner goes, I don't know what other teams are interested in him. I did hear a rumor of the Dodgers, but I don't know how... I don't know how hot that rumor is.
The Mets were rumored where he started his career. They foolishly let him go. But the Mets are just being cheap. The Mets are pulling on Boston and not spending money now. After getting everything blown up in their face with Verlander and Scherzer. Big talker Cohen's not opening up the strings at all. No. Like Turner was like, I can see myself going back to the Mets. That'd be fun. And they're like, they really haven't attempted to sign him. If I'm trying, I don't want to go there. You think you want to go maybe back to LA? But I guess they're all set. It's gonna be interesting to see where Turner. He's still a really, really, really good player. Interesting to see where he's gonna go.
Well, you never know. He could end up returning to LA, especially with them. With Kike Hernandez being a free agent.
Yeah. Yeah, he could go back there. He's popular wherever he goes. He's got an invitation to join a lot of teams, I'm sure.
Right. You know, with Kike Hernandez being a free agent, you know, they would need a bench bat, and that would be, you know, he may still do that, even if it means specifically, like, okay, you won't see as much playing time, but hey, you'll be on a World Series contender.
Yeah,
So who knows? I mean, it's entirely possible. And obviously, you know, his whole market is probably going to come through. It's probably going to emerge at some point here.
Most definitely. Steve, I got to jump in. I'll try calling back in right before 11, man.
All right.
Yeah. Cool. See you guys.
All righty. Also, the Mets, they have signed Adam Ottavino to a one-year, $4.5 million deal, pending a physical, that is. And it's kind of funny considering he declined a player option worth $6.75 million. $6.75 million player option that he declined with the club, and yet he decides to return for less money, which doesn't really make sense, but
no, doesn't.
Whatever, I suppose.
He's nuts.
The Washington Nationals, they signed first baseman / outfielder Joey Gallo to a one-year deal for about $5 million with another $1 million in performance bonuses. And it also contains a mutual option for the 2025 season as well. As far as Gallo goes, he ended up posting, he only ended up batting about 177 in 332 plate appearances for the Twins last season. But it was still good enough for 101 OPS. So apparently it's worth the money to still bring him back, even though he's basically a shit hitter now, apparently.
Yeah.
Let's see. 11-year veteran Colin McHugh also announced his retirement via Instagram this week. Doesn't come as a big surprise, but it also seems like he still had gas left in the tank. However, dealing with shoulder tendonitis and his performance slipping a little bit last year, his velocity was still good as ever at the age of 36. He finishes his career with a 71-47 record with a 3.72 ERA and 127 starts and 219 relief appearances as a major leaguer. Elsewhere, the Texas Rangers, they signed right-handed pitcher David Robertson to a one-year $11.5 million deal. And according to MLB.com's Mark Feinsand, Robertson will get $5 million this year, $5 million deferred between 2027 and 2031, and a $7 million mutual option for 2025 that also includes a $1.5 million buyout. While he'll probably be the setup man for Jose Leclerc, it's entirely possible he could end up leading the Rangers in saves this year, potentially, from what it sounds like, according to this to the contract that he had signed. However, Lou, we have some big news to talk about, specifically in the NFL. The first one, Jim Harbaugh leaving Michigan to accept the Chargers head coaching job. And it turns out he will be bringing his defensive coordinator from Michigan with him as well, apparently. Now,
just heard a rumor that Harbaugh wants Kaepernick.
Why would he want Kaepernick when he has Justin Herbert?
Exactly. I mean, because, you know, Kaepernick's been out now for so long, and, you know, he probably won't even have anything if he did come back. I mean, he's probably lost those few steps, and he's now, you know, it's been out 10 years. So I don't even see a point of him even coming back. But I did just hear a rumor about that.
But, you know, Harbaugh, though, having just won the national title with the Michigan Wolverines, by the way, the coach that had taken over for him when he was suspended, that coach has now become the permanent head coach of the Wolverines, with Harbaugh officially leaving back to the NFL. Harbaugh was last in the NFL with the San Francisco 49ers, leading them to a Super Bowl appearance in four seasons with the team. And now he returns to the NFL with a young quarterback in Herbert and looking to completely turn around the L.A. Chargers organization as a whole. So, I mean, what are your thoughts, Lou, on Jim Harbaugh deciding that now was the time to jump back over to the NFL?
I think he should have stayed at Michigan, maybe try to get a chance to repeat. You know, they did well. They did well with him, and all of a sudden, he has to bolt out of it, go back to the NFL. I don't think he was right. He built Michigan back up to glory, and then all of a sudden, just like that, he wants to bolt through. Okay, I know he had the problems earlier this year with the suspension and whatnot. Maybe that might have something to it, but still, that was wrong for the league, Michigan. Can he help? Can he help the Chargers? I don't even know if the Chargers can help themselves. I mean, that franchise is just like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot of work that has to be done with the Chargers, but, you know,
yeah.
One would say, you know, one would argue that maybe if they have the right offensive mind, that maybe perhaps, you know, maybe perhaps he could get more out of that offense.
Oh, they can sure use a step up in that offense, that's for sure.
By the way, a new Tropicana Field attendance record, 48,044 people for the Royal Rumble tonight, a new Tropicana Field attendance record, which, I mean, it's not that hard to do considering the fact that the Tampa Bay Rays barely get anybody to go to their games to begin with, but
yeah.
You know, that is officially a new attendance record for a sporting event in Tropicana Field. Now, obviously, you know, when it comes to Harbaugh, the thing that's interesting is Harbaugh was also in line for the Atlanta Falcons job.
Yeah.
It was between him and Belichick for the Atlanta Falcons job. However, there is one name that randomly came out of the blue, out of nowhere, and it wasn't Belichick, as the Falcons have officially hired Rams defensive coordinator Raheem Morris to be their head coach. I mean, this guy hasn't been a head coach in over a decade after previously being the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So why now?
You know, it's kind of surprising that they went with Raheem Morris on a 5-year deal, might I add. And because of this, the Rams will receive 2 third-round compensatory picks for losing Morris to the Atlanta Falcons. But Morris is a 2-time Super Bowl champion. Having been with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers back in 2002, as well as being on the LA Rams, being the defensive coordinator for the Rams for Super Bowl. Let me make sure I have this right. I think it's 51, I think it was. Wait a minute, LV1. What is LV1? I think it's 51? No, 56. Not 51, 56.
Oh.
I'm an idiot. For Super Bowl 56.
Yeah.
But, as I said, he was previously the head coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for 3 years, from 2009 to 2011, where he went 17-31 at the helm of the Buccaneers. Then he was last a head coach for the Atlanta Falcons back in 2020, where he had a 4-7 record as the interim head coach back then. And now they've decided to go back to him over Bill Belichick. And I'm wondering if the reason is because Belichick wanted more authority over the team. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Lou? Because with Raheem Morris taking the job, that basically Belichick hasn't interviewed for any other team. So
right.
It was basically the Atlanta Falcons are bust for him.
Exactly. But, you know, with that team, you know, I think, you know, can Belichick, you know, turn the team into something? I mean, that whole division, though, you know, is just a complete trash dump. You know, Falcons, the Saints, the Panthers, and all that, you know. But, you know, Belichick, you know, maybe the guy that, you know, do. I mean, look what he did for the Patriots before he came along. I mean, the Patriots was a joke, pre-Tom Brady. But then he got Brady and turned powers. Maybe he can help his team because they can show he uses it. Because that team has not been the same since the ultimate choke in the Super Bowl. And, you know, I mean, Belichick, you know, proves to be a winner. So maybe he can help return the team, you know, back to glory, we're thinking.
Lou, that he would be the option, but yet instead they go with Raheem Morris.
Yeah, why would you go with someone who hasn't coached in a decade? I mean, what's that going to – I don't think it's going to help.
Maybe it's because of his familiarity with the team, because he was last the interim head coach for them in 2020 with a 4-7 record, but I mean – I know he's drawn excellent praise for his job with the LA Rams defense, but at the same time, I would think that there would have been more capable candidates.
Maybe you should bring back Dustin Blank. No, that wouldn't work. Oof.
And as far That's as bad. Belichick goes. I brought up this possibility on your show earlier today. There is a rumor that Andy Reid may be coaching his final season, regardless of if he wins the Super Bowl or not, or if he makes it to the Super Bowl. And there's a possibility that Belichick may be holding out so that he can take over for the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's a possibility.
I mean, imagine going from Tom Brady to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I think it's a little premature. I don't know if, Reed is getting up there in years, so maybe. But I still think maybe, you know, one more year, I think, or two would be just about it. Other than that, then I think maybe he'll retire. I don't think he's ready yet.
Yeah, you know, I would think that maybe he would do one more year, especially if they win again. Adam Schefter said that it's purely speculation, and he doesn't have any sources telling him that Andy Reid is ready to walk away.
No.
But yeah, of course, this was brought up by Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio. Like, what if he does retire, yada, yada, yada? Would they go back to Eric Bieniemy as his successor? You know, I would think that if Andy Reid does retire, the only logical person to go to would be Belichick.
Yes.
I mean, just think about it. You go, if you have, obviously you have Steve Spagnuolo already in charge of that defense, but you bring in Belichick. We already know that Patrick Mahomes is the magic man. You know, he can make anything happen regardless of what he has to work with out there. You bring in Belichick to work on that defense, they're already terrifying. You know, the Saints are already terrifying as it is. But then you bring in Belichick to work on that defense. I mean, that's, in my opinion at least, that would be the best option for the Kansas City Chiefs. Right, what are your thoughts on that, Lou? The Chiefs potentially moving if Andy Reid decides to retire, moving from Reid over to Belichick.
Well, Belichick would be the obvious choice if Reid does decide to retire. Does Belichick, you know, I mean, like I said, turn the Patriots, but the turn the Patriots into a powerhouse, you know, but. Then again, the Chiefs, you know, they are a positive team, a great team, and you know they can, but I think they can use a little bit more help with their defense. I think I'd be a positive, because I don't see Belichick, retiring just yet. You know, he's only had a bad year this year, but I think there's just just a little hiccup along the way. I think if he can go to the Chiefs, I think he's going to get back on track.
Yeah, I would expect if he goes to the Chiefs. I mean, obviously Patrick Mahomes is a hell of a lot different of a quarterback to work with than somebody like Mac Jones or Cam Newton or Bailey Zappi. You know, this would basically be Belichick moving from Brady to Brady.
Right. Billy Zappi.
Yeah. So, okay, yeah, the Falcons, they go to Raheem Morris. The Tennessee Titans, they have finalized a deal to hire former Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan as their new head coach. Callahan was on many teams' short lists this offseason after the Bengals scored 21.5 points per game while fighting through a multitude of injuries this year. Hailing from the Gary Kubiak coaching tree, Callahan has previously worked with legitimate quarterbacks such as Peyton Manning, Matthew Stafford, and Joe Burrow. So what the Titans decide to do at quarterback this offseason could shape the franchise for years to come, and Callahan is likely now to have his hand in that decision, which, by the way, Callahan's deal is a five-year deal officially.
Yeah. They do that, the more votes we get.
So, that's another interesting hire, though, to go from a defensive coach in Mike Vrabel to an offensive coach in Callahan. It kind of shows a shifting of philosophy, essentially, for the Tennessee organization. Elsewhere, the Carolina Panthers, they have hired Buccaneers offensive coordinator Dave Canales as their new head coach.
Right.
After only 1 year as the offensive coordinator for the Buccaneers, who helped lead the Bucs to a 9-8 record while guiding Baker Mayfield to an over 4,000 passing yard season while throwing 28 touchdowns and 10 picks. They ranked 20th in points per game with 20.5 points under Canales and 23rd in yards per game at 313 yards. But that was enough to put him on Carolina's radar. And also the Panthers were the only team to actually interview him. During this cycle. So what are your thoughts on Carolina bringing in Dave Canales?
Can it get any worse? I mean, Carolina is, a very pitiful team, and I don't know, I think it might take more than Canales to get that team back to what they were some years ago. Anyone did anything since Newton. I mean, Carolina, they got the first pick in the draft or the second pick in the draft, and If that doesn't help him, I mean, I think this team is going to be a shithole for some time to come.
I mean, it makes sense, though, to go with an offensive-minded coach, especially when you have a young quarterback like Bryce Young. You know,
right.
Obviously they had Frank Reich. You know, they had Frank Reich, who was also an offensive-minded coach, but it just didn't work under Reich. So maybe perhaps, you know, with a younger mind, it'll things will work a lot better this go-around. But it almost seems to me like Canales is more of – because let's keep in mind, they also hired a new general manager, too, by promoting assistant general manager Dan Morgan to the title of president of football operations as well as general manager. So it seems to me like this is – I wouldn't be surprised if this was more of a rebuild type of coach, like a coach that they would hire just to get them through the rebuild, so to speak. And by the way, with the men's Royal Rumble currently taking place, we have had yet another return to the WWE. Andrade, formerly known as Andrade Cien Almas during his last time with the WWE, but Andrade has officially returned to the WWE after his contract with AEW expired just a month or two ago. So he is officially back, and with the Men's Royal Rumble literally just underway here, only five competitors have come in so far. Possible there could be more returns or maybe debuts to be mentioned here. One other match result note, Logan Paul officially retained his United States Championship by disqualification over Kevin Owens. So now, obviously, right now they have the Men's Royal Rumble currently underway. So there is this bit of news, which, I mean, I guess it's not really in the grand scheme of things, not really worth much considering he's more of a depth receiver, if anything, but it still has to do with gambling. According to Wilson Alexander of The Advocate, Patriots wide receiver Kayshon Boutte has been arrested for illegal betting activities. He allegedly placed more than 8,900 bets while underage with a fake account at LSU. Some of those bets coming during his 2022 season at LSU. The rookie's sixth-round pick was booked on a felony count of computer fraud and a miscount of gaming prohibited by players under 21 and reportedly used an alias to place his bets. The article goes on to mention that Boutte is accused of betting on at least 17 NCAA football games, six of which were LSU games. LSU was reportedly made aware of the allegations back in July of 2023 when Boutte was already a member of the Patriots and has fully cooperated with authorities. Once a highly touted recruit, his final two seasons at LSU were filled with injuries and poor statistical performances. In just five games this season, he totaled two catches for 19 yards for the Patriots. According to the NFL Network's Ian Rapoport, the NFL issued a statement saying, "We are aware of the matter, but have no further comment at this time." So, I mean, it's not really a player of stature, so to speak, Lou, but I think this speaks more on the NFL's crackdown when it comes to illegal gambling.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't quit, you know. You hear a lot of these illegal gambling stories, and, you know, it just piles up more. All start with Pete Rose, and we go further down the line from there.
Right. Although, you know, although I should technically say, though, that, I should rephrase what I said, that it's not the NFL's crackdown, but this is more of a case of him, gambling illegally underage back when he was with LSU.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you know, you use a fake name to get away from the laws, but, you know, eventually they're going to find out. So you're not doing yourself any good. I mean, you can't wait one more year. I mean, really? You're that anxious to do it now? You have to break the law and, you know, risk going to jail for it? It's not worth it, buddy. You made a stupid mistake. It's the law. It's 21 for a reason, people. These laws are put in for a reason. And you just can't break, break them. How dumb can you be? That was a pretty dumb.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty damn stupid. What they decided to, you know, the fact that he decided to even do that. But, I mean, I understand, you know, being in college, wanting to make money.
Right, of course.
You know, wanting to make money, but, you know, it just.
Yeah, but you guys think, is it worth the risk? No.
Yeah, ultimately, though, this is obviously going to go on his record, obviously. So, needless to say, I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots move on from him this offseason once free agency officially opens.
I wouldn't doubt it.
But we do have some conference title games to talk about. Starting with the AFC. The Kansas City Chiefs are underdogs for yet the second time, the second straight week, taking on the Baltimore Ravens, and the Chiefs may potentially be without Joe Tooney, who suffered a strained pectoral muscle.
Yes.
Against the Bills. I mean, that would be a pretty big loss, considering he's a former All-Pro guard.
When you get to this time of year, injuries are could be a big factor in the game. It can mean the difference between, you know, you winning or you losing. So this is not a time for one of your best players to get injured. That could lead the advantage to your opponent.
Exactly. Matter of fact, let me see if I can find. News injuries. Let me see if I can find the. Well, no, actually, technically, there's no injury report for both games. So,
not officially.
So I guess we won't. Well, actually, that's on NFL.com. Let me check ESPN. Maybe ESPN has it. You know, that's going to be a potentially huge input. You know, a huge swing potentially. By the way, the line's now up to 4.5 for Baltimore. Let me see. They have Kadarius Toney listed as out for Kansas City.
Yes.
Let's see, full injury report. Let's go Kansas City. Joe Tooney has officially been listed as out. So that is a huge loss for Kansas City's offensive line going into tomorrow, as they'll be without their all-pro guard attempting to protect Patrick Mahomes. So as if they were facing a tall enough task having to deal with Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, but now they'll be without Joe Tooney. Looks like they'll also be without defensive tackle Derek Enadi, who has been ruled out with a tricep injury. Actually, he's been placed on injured reserve, I think. And also Sky Moore as well with a knee injury. Tony, as I said, he's out with a hip injury and also personal reasons. And also they will be without offensive tackle Prince Tega Wanago, I think is how you pronounce that.
Yeah, I think that too.
Let's bring back Alex. Alex, we're discussing the championship games that are set to take place tomorrow. What are your thoughts on the chances for Kansas City against Baltimore?
I think it's going to go down to the wire. I mean, it's impossible to assume anything against when you're playing against Mahomes. The signs point, yeah, this is Baltimore's year. I think it is. But I think it's going to be a really close game, and I wouldn't feel comfortable going against Mahomes ever. I mean, it's impossible really to game plan for the guy because he pulls that magic. So he's capable of doing anything at any given moment. Andy Reid's the perfect coach for him. I mean, they're just so dangerous. So I know you listened to – good job listening to the injuries. I mean, they'll be able to – I think they'll still overcome that. Baltimore's defense is going to get to him, but he's still going to make big plays. I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but personally, I think it's going to come down to the wire, like a field goal either way. I think Baltimore is going to win the game. What do I know at the end of the day? But that's my personal gut. I think it is kind of their year, and like they're going to be vicious. They're going to really hit Mahomes early and often. But I mean, he's still going to put up points. The Chiefs are always going to put up their share of points.
Mm.
So I don't see how it's going to be lopsided. I think Baltimore really closed it out.
Yeah, I don't see that at all.
Yeah, and see, I don't know. Did you already talk about Detroit? I can hold off. Whatever you want to do.
No, we haven't talked about Detroit yet, but
gotcha. Yeah, that's my two cents.
We were
going
to bring up Detroit next.
I really think KC is going to be hanging with them, just because I've never seen Mahomes and Andy Reid not be around making it a damn entertaining game. And then you have, I don't want to say it, but it's kind of like Hollywood script with the NBA, NFL. Sometimes they like that storyline. They would love to see Mrs. Taylor Swift in every commercial and every spotlight and every camera angle during all Super Bowl buildup and every moment of the Super Bowl. I mean, that would be a huge marketing home run for the NFL if the Chiefs and Swifties made it to the Super Bowl. That's maybe more like betting angle, but like that, the Chiefs are going to be down to the wire. They're going to be right in that, if not win it. But I think at the very end, I think Baltimore will squeeze by. But I mean, it's interesting. I think that Taylor Swift thing, I hate to say it, but stuff like that happens in pro sports. I don't know if Goodell would do it, but maybe those refs have a little extra incentive to call some against Baltimore tomorrow and help the Chiefs a little bit to make sure Swift is around for Super Bowl. I don't know.
The thing that is really worrisome, though, is the fact that they'll be without their all-pro guard Joe Tooney.
Yes.
Kansas City. So
yeah,
I don't know how good the rest of Kansas City's offensive line is, but I guarantee you whoever they have replacing Tooney is nowhere near as good as Tooney.
Yeah. And Baltimore's getting back Andrews. Baltimore's got a little injuries. Mahomes is healthy. Pacheco's healthy. I mean, they still have their biggest. Yeah, I mean, losing a lineman hurts. But, I mean, they still.
By the way, this.
They're still going to score points.
This just in, by the way, the Philadelphia Eagles are hiring former offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys, Kellen Moore, as their next offensive coordinator, according to Adam Schefter.
Like him? Lou, did you like him in Dallas calling the plays? I have mixed feelings about him. I love they got the Dolphins. I love the Vic Fangio. They got the defensive coordinator I like. Did you like Kellen Moore, Lou?
Yeah, I do. I think it helped. Of course, I still think that, we should get rid of our coach.
Yeah. I wish the Eagles had gotten rid of Sirianni, but they got two good – I like Kellen Moore. Do you have any thoughts on Kellen Moore to the Eagles? He seemed like he called some good stuff for the Cowboys.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, that's a big W. That's a big W for Philly.
Cool.
Getting Kellen Moore.
They got two new, brand-new coordinators. Yeah, I would have liked to see Sirianni go, but, hey, they are making some changes, which is good. So you like Moore a lot. That's cool. That's reassuring. Yeah, I mean, I remember early on in Dallas, he was really, really popular. And then maybe kind of at the end, it was like, okay, maybe it's time for a change. But I know Moore's got some skills. He's got some really savvy, creative, offensive ideas. Yeah, that sounds that's a good move.
I mean, you saw some things that he put up for some schemes that he put up for Dak Prescott. Imagine what he could do for Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm gonna have to. I'll be reading about him late night tonight. That's cool. A little Saturday night's news on Saturday night.
Now, as far as Baltimore goes, basically the only player they'll probably be without is DelShawn Phillips, one of their linebackers. He's considered doubtful with a shoulder injury. So, other than that, they're relatively healthy. Now, let's see, Detroit against San Francisco. As far as Detroit goes, they'll be without Khalif Raymond or Jonah Jackson. Hendon Hooker, he's not even their starting quarterback. So basically, Detroit, they don't really have injuries. I shouldn't say that because their center, Frank Ragnow, is dealing with a sprained knee and a sprained ankle after both against Tampa Bay. However, it has been reported that he will play. He will play tomorrow. So, those offensive linemen out of Arkansas, they're a different breed. We'll put it that way.
They're blue collar men. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different breed when it comes to dealing with injuries and shit like that. San Francisco goes, it looks like Deebo Samuel will officially play because he did not suffer a fracture in his shoulder, but he was in a lot of pain after the game against Green Bay.
Might not be effective tomorrow. Of course, he's going to suit up. If he can walk, he's going to be out there. But we'll see. The Lions are going to test him and hit him a few times, see how healthy he really is.
Right. I would expect that he would be, I would expect that he's good to go because he's not on the injury report. So, And with that being said, I think it was Steve Davidson who said that this is going to be maybe one of the best NFC championship games of all time. I don't know if I would go that far, but I do think, I do expect that it would be a high-scoring game for this matchup. But, San Francisco, let's face it, San Francisco is just so unfair when it comes to their – when their offense is all healthy, it's just unfair how they're able to score in certain situations.
Yeah.
So I would expect that Detroit's Cinderella run will probably come to an end here at the hands of Brock Purdy. And I think, if anything, this is probably this is Brock Purdy's best opportunity that he's had in his career with a fully healthy team. Because, like we've said before, we know what kind of quarterback Brock Purdy is. When he has a fully healthy offense, he's an elite quarterback. When one or two of his weapons are missing, he's just another average quarterback.
It's gonna be real interesting about Deebo, man. He looked like he was in a world of pain. 7 days ago. They're not going to, they can hide it if they want to, if they can be creative. I don't know if he really, truly is really, really healthy. Because he's trying it all week. Please let me play. Please let me play. But, I'm not saying he's hurt, but he still might be a little bit hurt. And without Deebo, when Deebo banged up last week, Purdy went from pretty good to very, very, very average. They escaped with a win against the Packers. So I know
right.
The Niners are loaded. I know I've given them credit, but dude, Detroit, you know they're going to – I'm not telling anything you guys don't already know. Like, Detroit's going to be playing their asses off. They're going to be hitting. They're going to be – this is like Detroit's Super Bowl of all time. So they're going to be playing balls to the wall. I think it's going to be a really good game. But yeah, definitely. San Fran's definitely a better team, more talented. But Detroit, I mean, they could run like a fake punt. They could do – you know, they're going to go for it probably on fourth down and short. I think Detroit's going to play – you know what I mean? Extra aggressive because they're kind of playing with house money. The pressure's on one team. The pressure's on San Francisco, not on Detroit.
Right. No, obviously, it's definitely on San Francisco when you consider the fact that they're the overall, you know, on paper, they're the overall better team. So everybody's expecting them, you know, to put Dallas away, or not Dallas, to put Detroit away in this matchup.
Right.
So, you know, it's definitely.
You think it'll be a close game, or like a 10-point win, or like you think Niners will win by like 3 or 7 at the end, or do you think they're gonna?
I think it all depends on how San Francisco starts out. If they start out really aggressive, like if they're moving the ball at will, so to speak, then we could be in for a long, you know, we could be in for a very high scoring affair in San Francisco's case. It all depends on how well they move the ball against Detroit's defense.
Lou, you think Detroit can hang Lou, or you think San Fran all the way?
No, I'm always going to pick Detroit. I mean, they're hungry. They've waited forever for this. And, you know, Goff really stepped up, so, I mean, he's there for the Rams. He can do it for Detroit. You know, they're ready for this. They are psyched up for it.
Yeah.
I'm going with them all the way.
I'm really rooting hard. It's fun, Detroit. I mean, the fan base. I know the Niners are overdue, too, but it's what is it, 3? They got there last year. Yeah, I mean, the Niners, man. If Purdy doesn't get it done tomorrow, he's going to have a lot more critics, that's for sure.
Right. Although, who knows, maybe it might not be Purdy's fault, you know.
Yeah, you're right. I'm extra tough on him. But, I mean, they're just so talented. I don't know, and Detroit's vulnerable, too. Like, they can get beat by the pass, too. That's what scares me.
Right.
But if Debo's a little banged up, man, and Detroit, you know, if it's like, you know, 14-14, if it's like a close game, the later it gets, Detroit's going to get more and more confident. You're right. It's not rocket science. If the Niners start strong, it could be a long day for Detroit. But if Detroit's hanging around, man, they're going to start getting cocky. They could steal it. Yeah,
they could make it. They could make it very interesting if Detroit's hanging around. If San Francisco gets off to an early lead, and I'm talking like 10-0, 14-0. If they get off to an early lead like that, it could be there could be the possibility that you could see a potential run up of the score.
Yeah. And Detroit, it's interesting, man. I know with Purdy and Samuel really affected last week's score, but the San Fran D, man, I really haven't been totally overly impressed by them. Everyone talk because they have a lot of obviously big names on defense too, with Bosa and all these guys. But they've shown to me.
Right.
I think Detroit Packers could move the ball. I think Detroit could definitely move the ball. Great receiver, St. Brown. 2 really good running backs, Montgomery and Gibbs. Great tight end, Laporta. If Goff doesn't screw up, which he's done before, like if Goff plays well, Detroit will be able to score some points, I think.
Right. No,
yeah,
I definitely agree.
They could score 24 points, 27 points maybe. Denver, it might be a shootout.
It depends on what Jared Goff you get. It depends on what Jared Goff you get. If you get the Jared Goff who disappeared in the Super Bowl for the Rams, then,
yeah,
you know, this isn't going to be a game for too long. If you get the resurgent Jared Goff that we've seen so far this year, then, you know, maybe perhaps there might be something there for Detroit's offense today or tomorrow.
I'm not saying anything earth-shattering. I think it's going to be imperative, really important for them to play keep away. Just if I'm Detroit, against two really good running backs, they have an incredibly good offensive line, too. Just control the ball, you know, just run. Try to hold on to the ball. Don't let San Fran's big-powered offense get the ball too much and just try to build an early lead that way. Because Goff's probably not going to win a shootout, but yeah. I'm Detroit, man. I'm just running the ball and just keeping the ball on my side and just try to grind it against, because Detroit's got a really good, really physical offensive line. They can just run 70% of the game, I think. Yeah, unless they're
– Right.
Unless
it's
they
entirely
go down there,
possible.
Like
that might be what they potentially decide to do.
And then that way –
Because they have been able to shove the ball down their throat.
Yeah, and then you're not giving Goff a chance to F up too much. you just run it. Niners can't score without the
right.
ball. Goff can't mess up, just handed it off. Although he's done that too. Goff better show up. That's the key.
A couple of other notes to make as well here. The Miami Dolphins, they have decided to mutually part ways with defensive coordinator Vic Fangio. Fangio is expected to be the new defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, according to Adam Schefter, which it says that basically Miami is allowing him to leave in order to be closer to his family in Pennsylvania, which I guess makes sense, but I don't know. It didn't seem like Miami was struggling defensively.
No, not at all. And they lost their two best pass rushers, their best corner. They got destroyed by injuries. So it wasn't Fangio's fault that they kind of collapsed at the end. I don't know. That's interesting. I'm always of the belief I think McDaniel's overrated personally.
Right.
I don't know. I think Fangio's a better fit. It's more blue collar and his family's from Pennsylvania. So he's a better fit.
Right. It just seems weird that, because we normally don't see it. We normally don't see this happen where a team allows their coordinator to leave to be closer to home. You normally don't see that.
Maybe they just wanted to be kind of gracious and like just kind of say it that way. Yeah. Maybe one side definitely
Possibly.
Wanted out. You never know.
Possibly. Also, the Packers, they fired their defensive coordinator, Joe Barry, who has been their defensive coordinator since 2021. His unit collapsed during crucial parts of the season before they stepped up this past postseason. They allowed the 9th highest EPA per play and the 6th highest success rate. Packers opponents regularly exploited the middle of the field, and Barry seemed hesitant to blitz and pressure the passer in critical late game situations. So that's seemingly why it has cost him his job out there in Green Bay. Is what it appears here. going over to the NBA though, we have maybe one of the more confusing firings to talk about. The Milwaukee Bucks randomly decided, even though they had the number 2 seed, they randomly decided to fire head coach Adrian Griffin, despite having a 30-13 record at the time. And their defensive approach this season has been a concern, with them being ranked 21st in rating and 25th in points allowed. And now Doc Rivers has instead been hired to be the new head coach, taking over for Adrian Griffin, which, we said this when they first acquired Damian Lillard, that it would be a big mistake to get rid of, to get rid of Jrue Holiday and instead bring in Damian Lillard, replacing defense with offense.
Yeah.
I mean, did we not?
Yeah, that's their identity. Left town when Real Holiday went to Boston because he's their defensive stalwart. He's maybe the best. They're definitely the best perimeter defender in the NBA. And Lillard's all-world offense. He plays, doesn't play a lick. He's a parking cone on defense. He doesn't even move. I mean, it's really bad how bad his defense is. So it's a huge downgrade. This reminds me of when LeBron – see, I don't know if Giannis or Lillard shouldn't have a say. He just got to Milwaukee. But the only time this has happened in my memory was when the Cavaliers fired David Blatt, that first-year coach from overseas, and they were like 30-11.
Yeah.
But I read that in more too.
Now, look, but I mean, there has to be a legitimate reason behind the fire, because you just don't fire somebody, you know,
with that kind of a record.
Yeah, you know, without legitimate reason. Maybe something behind the scenes. But other than that, you know, there was no reason why he should have been fired. Now,
no,
if you're dealing with, you know, the San Antonio Spurs versus Red Pistons, which, of course, suck like anything, I mean, you should have been fired like day one. But there has to be something behind the surface for this, you know, to take place. Because the Cavaliers had to happen some time ago when
David Blatt
was fired with the David Blatt with a great record. Yet they wanted to win the championship that year anyway, but still, they were first.
LeBron
place.
Wanted him out.
Yeah. All LeBron wanted him out.
I think it's got to be something like what you're saying with Blatt. Like in what I was saying, I think it's definitely Giannis is always the perfect child, right? He's always acting like he's totally innocent and he's a perfect character. He said awesome things about him since the firing. I would bet $5 that Giannis is behind it.
It's funny you say that.
I'm sure one of the stars, let's fill in the blank. I don't think it's Lillard. Lillard's been a buck for like 5 months. It's Mr. Buck, the franchise. Giannis had to have said something. Let's get him out of here.
Yeah,
apparently they said that veterans were starting to lose faith in him, which is funny considering they have the number two seed at the time.
Yeah.
You have the number two
seed,
and you're losing faith in your head coach.
And, come on, their vets are Lillard. Look, Lillard's brand new. He shouldn't have that much say yet. It's got to be the face of the franchise. Giannis had to tell him
also Bobby Portis, too. Could be Bobby Portis,
too. Chris Middleton, Lopez. I wouldn't look at those guys. Yeah, I bet it's Giannis. And then, of course, Giannis has been gushing like, oh, I love the guy. I'm so sorry he left. He didn't want to get viewed like Durant and Harden and the other coach killers. But I think he just murdered. I think he got rid of that coach. There's no other – it's hard to explain in any other reason that could have taken place. Like Lou said, 30.
Yeah, second
seed in the East, and you can fire him. Otherwise, it makes absolutely no sense.
Right. Yeah. It just makes to me. It makes no sense. The fact that he was such a highly touted assistant coach this past off season. You hire him. And now what you're basically doing is you're basically putting all the blame on him when really you should be putting the blame on management for going out and trading defense for offense.
Dick. And wondering why
you know, trading defense for offense. Bringing in Damian Lillard when I guarantee you if they had kept Drew Holiday, they would probably be in the same spot that they are right now.
Yeah, we argue that. Yeah, they're a great roster with both Holiday or Lillard. They really wanted Lillard, but I mean to give up Holiday is just it took a massive hit to their defense. And then they're like,
he's the fall guy.
Yeah, exactly. I really think Giannis, just like LeBron did to Blatt back in when Cleveland was near the top of the league and they fired him. It has to be their star player saying, "Hey, let's make a change." Maybe Giannis loves Doc Rivers, or the veterans were really lobbying for Doc to get hired. It makes no sense to just suddenly fire Griff.
I'll tell you one thing. Speaking of Giannis apparently is the reason why Nick Nurse didn't get hired. Milwaukee wanted Nick Nurse.
Yeah.
Great coach.
Milwaukee wanted Nick Nurse this offseason, and Giannis basically told them, no, I will not play for him.
No.
There's more and more – I've had seen more and more evidence of Giannis not being the all, you know, the golden child, the perfect guy. He's pulled a lot of stunts. I think he's behind this.
I'll tell you one thing. Congratulations. Congratulations, Milwaukee. If you're up 3-1 in a series, you better hope to God that you can close it out, because Doc Rivers cannot close out series now.
As of recent years. And he was fired. I don't know if Rivers would be the best idea for to replace, you know, for a coach. You know, three times you couldn't get out of the second round of the playoffs. I mean, if you're looking for a guy that's going to probably, you know, I mean, always has the experience, but if you're looking for a guy that's going to probably take you to a championship, I don't think Doc is your guy.
I was so annoyed that, frustrated that Coach Bud got fired after he won the championship. They were absolutely crippled by injuries. That's why they weren't good last year. They were missing half their team. And then they fired him. I still think, and it wouldn't surprise me if Giannis is behind that one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 2 years in a row. They're making these sudden coaching changes. Someone in that locker room is demanding that they're making these moves. I think it's Giannis.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know how it's been with him, that Giannis, you know, he's grown such a huge head, you know, ever since he won that NBA title.
He really has.
Which, I mean, it's more than Giannis.
You guys remember? You guys, you know, some of the stuff he pulled this after the game, where he set some record and was chasing people through the tunnel trying to get the ball back from like an 8-year-old fan, or when he was after a game where he missed free throws, he came out and the Sixers employees, some guy making minimum wage, was trying to just clean the court to go home at like midnight on like a Tuesday night, and Giannis was removing the guy's ladder and wouldn't let them clean the court. He wanted to practice, just random things like that, but. After a while, you're like, wow, you keep hearing, like, maybe this guy isn't such a nice guy after all. He seems to pull some really ridiculous stuff. So that's why I'm thinking, you know what? It's got this guy's name on it. I think Giannis pulled this stunt on the coach.
It would not surprise me at all. I don't know if he was behind the whole Budenholzer ousting. I think, if anything, I think Milwaukee was just kind of tired of, after they won the NBA title, I think it was more of a case of Budenholzer's teams were just falling short. You know, like they had lost their killer instinct, basically. I think that's what the main problem was that they felt like they had lost their killer instinct. I mean, we saw what happened the last couple times they faced Boston. The last couple series in the playoffs that they had against Boston – you know, they had just basically lost their killer instinct.
Sometimes change is good, but I think this one was unwarranted. I think Griffin really got screwed. Maybe Bud maybe Coach Bud was maybe a legit good change, but I don't know.
Yeah,
and they're just an older team now too. Middleton's really banged up. He's slow, and Dame doesn't play any defense. Lopez is an ogre. I mean, I think Boston will smoke him if they match up in the playoffs again.
Assuming Boston can stay healthy, that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this guy's such a great dude coming from overseas, playing soccer and then learning basketball at a late age. Giannis is just like this golden boy, like, you know, the perfect guy. And then now recently I'm like, I'm not really a fan of Giannis at all. He's done some really just crummy things. So I think it's got his fingerprints on this one, Jeff.
Yeah. Now, there was another, you know, there was a trade that went down in the NBA this week that kind of had me scratching my head. I mean, it's a good thing, you know, it is actually an upgrade for Miami, I feel, offensively, but this is, I feel like this is another sort of offensive-defensive type of type of switch, because Miami got absolutely destroyed by Boston when they made this trade, trading Kyle Lowry and a first-round pick in 2027 to the Charlotte Hornets for Terry Rozier. And, I mean, Terry Rozier, I mean, come on, if you can acquire a 22.5 point per game scorer for a guy who's not even averaging over 10 points per game, you'd do that any day, wouldn't you?
Most times, but again, defense for offense. What do the Heat pride themselves on? The Heat, their identity is defense.
Offense.
Now they have
offense.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean the Heat are a defensive team. Yeah, when you trade offense for defense for offense, the Heat traded a defender for Rozier, who just puts up a lot of shots. He's small and doesn't play defense. Same with Tyler Hero. So it's like this. Is,
I mean this one though, I don't blame them on.
I don't
blame them on this
one.
Would
want that move?
No.
I don't know if it fits the Heat. So it's a weird trade.
Well, you look at it like this though. Kyle Lowry has been past his prime for how many years now? You know, I mean, I would actually consider this an upgrade for Miami.
Rozier,
to be fair,
he's a really good scorer. I just don't think he fits the Heat culture. He's a smaller guy who really doesn't play a lot of defense. That's why I'm a little confused. And they got their ass
right
in Boston. They lost by double digits today to the Knicks. I don't know. Because what I do know is Tyler Hero is a guy who shoots a lot and doesn't play defense, just like Rozier. So now they have two smaller guards taking a ton of shots, and they're just not, like, fits on the Heat, really. That's why the Heat were trying to trade Hero. And now they got Rozier next to him, and they both shoot. They both love to shoot and not really play defense. It's just not really typical of, like, a Pat Riley team.
It did seem like a bit of an odd trade at first, but you know, I kind of look at it like this though. When you consider who they lost to, who did they lose to LA this off season?
Who's been injured?
Yeah, Gabe Vincent.
Been injured.
When you consider they lost Gabe Vincent this off season, who was one of their big offensive weapons last year. You know, and you bring in Terry Rozier, you almost sort of obviously he's not the same defensive player that Vincent was, but you still regain some of that shooting that you would get from Vincent. Now, I've always – maybe it's weird. Maybe I've seen them as more of an offensive team because they've always been known for relying on the three or relying on getting the ball to the rim, like with Bam Adebayo, for example.
Yeah.
I've never really known them for being a defensive team because, if anything, I'd say Bam Adebayo is probably their only real – defensive guy, so to speak.
Well, Butler's a really kick-ass defender when he's healthy.
Who? Oh, Butler.
Jimmy
Butler. Yeah, Butler. Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy Butler is good defensively, but I'm talking about overall, though.
Gabe Vincent, Kyle Lowry, Butler, Adebayo, you're talking about four of their starters last year for the last couple of years, and now they're just totally – different. And last year when they had their awesome run, they didn't even have Tyler Hero. So how much do they need him?
Right.
Now they add Hero and Rozier, two smaller guards that don't play D and that shoot a ton. I don't know. Rozier, he's a tough player to really see like how good he is because, I mean, he's been on – how did you like him in Boston? That's right. He played for Celtics for 4 or 5 years. Did you like him
Rozier,
there?
You know, Rozier, I never wanted him out of Boston.
Did he play defense then? Maybe I'm wrong on him. Does he play any – is he decent with defense?
I mean, he was okay with Boston
yeah.
in terms of defense. He was okay, but he was known mainly for his playmaking and his shooting ability.
Yeah. No, he's a talented. It's just kind
of. I mean, just
hero
think of a
him.
Younger. Just think of a younger Kyle Lowry, basically.
Yeah.
Which I mean, in my opinion, it's an upgrade for Miami.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's Pat Riley and Spoelstra, man. That's the identity is D and like hustling and playing on stuff. That's why Jimmy Butler's been so popular with Riley and Spoelstra. But they've got your they've changed their culture, Steve. Maybe you're right, and they're more offensive because they're going away from that and getting more guys like Rozier. I was watching them today. It was like I watched them a little bit today just to see Rozier, and the Knicks are playing awesome. It's fun that they're finally relevant again. But
yeah,
Rozier and Hero were literally just catching the ball and shooting threes. They each shot like 12 threes.
Well, that's basically been what Miami's offense has been all about.
And Jimmy Butler and Adebayo were like playing D and like watching the two small guys shoot all day. I'm like, what is going on here? It's not really.
That's the thing though. that's the thing though. That was essentially, especially in their series with Boston. That was essentially what Miami's game plan was the entire time, was literally, kick it out, give the ball to Butler, have him shoot a three. If it's not working with Butler, give it to your secondary scorers.
Like Max Truth, they had him.
All for three.
Gabe Vincent. Yeah, you're right. They did have a bunch of people. Caleb Martin. Yeah, they just shoot. You're right. They do shoot a ton of threes. I've never been a fan of that, but. Bolster and Riley know a bit more about how to play. But, yeah, just I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if you win a championship doing that, but
no.
I think you want to get the ball to Bam and Butler more. Let them do the dirty work. Let them score more, too.
Yeah. Now – I mean, honestly, I still think that just seeing how the Heat play, I still think they're the same. They're that same Heat team, despite their record. They're that same Heat team that Boston has had problems with in the playoffs the last couple of years.
Oh, it's dangerous. Yeah. And that Ben Butler, Butler's like playoff time. He's just a monster. Yeah, they're always going to be dangerous with that nucleus.
Now, Alex, I want to go back to something we talked about at the start of the show, and a little bit of a trigger warning here for people who listened to tonight's show. A little bit of a trigger warning because this topic I'm going to bring up is very, very sensitive, we'll put it that way. You remember how we talked about Vince McMahon in the past, right?
Of course. Yeah.
There was a story that broke on the Wall Street Journal involving a new lawsuit against Vince McMahon, accusing him of sex trafficking, sexual assault, and emotional abuse within the company. And this was done by a former employee by the name of Janelle Grant, who had apparently signed a non-disclosure agreement back in 2022 where McMahon agreed to pay her $3 million to not disclose anything about their relationship. And so the lawsuit has not just been filed against Vince, it's been filed against the WWE, and it's also been filed against former WWE executive John Laurinaitis. And in particular, it's very graphic, some of the stuff that has been described. And also, not to mention, former UFC and also WWE heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar is part of he wasn't officially named in the lawsuit.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There's only one wrestler who went on to become UFC heavyweight champion, and that's Brock Lesnar. So that's how he's described in the lawsuit. Basically, what would happen is McMahon passed this woman around to various members of the front office or of the Stamford office in Stamford, Connecticut. And in particular, notable things were he would use sex toys on her named after various male WWE wrestlers and performers, which also added a little race factor to it. So, for example, a black dildo that he would use on her would be named after an African-American wrestler, and a white dildo would be named after a Caucasian wrestler. He also had this sort of infatuation with pretending that other men, and namely certain WWE talent, were in the room with them. Not just that, but there was one occasion where he, and this is true, according to the Wall Street Journal, where he reportedly defecated on her during a threesome and then commanded her to continue pleasuring the other person while she had feces in her hair and running down her back while he ended up going to the bathroom to shower off. And upon his return, they then actively continued the threesome while she remained covered in his filth. And when his friend left, he then ordered her to continue to sexually gratify him. Then in another occasion, him and John Laurinaitis sexually assaulted her inside Laurinaitis' office back in 2021 while colleagues were busy at their desks. Basically, she had begged them to stop, but they forced themselves on her, each taking turns restraining her for the other, while saying no means yes and take it, bitch. When it comes to Brock Lesnar, basically the conditions of him agreeing to re-sign with the company involved her taking a video of herself urinating as well as various nude photos and videos of herself made specifically for him. And also with the promise as well that he would be able to fuck her at some point as well. And keep in mind, he already has a smoking hot wife in Sable, former WWE wrestler to begin with. And I mean, there's multiple other things also that has, you know, that Vince McMahon is implicated in as a part of this lawsuit. But she is looking to have the non-disclosure agreement be nullified, and also she's looking for monetary damages as well, which, according to Lou, she wants the full $3 million that Vince McMahon had agreed to pay her. But he had only paid her $1 million of the $3 million, basically only giving her one payment, essentially. So, I mean, we've talked about Vince McMahon before with the issues that surrounded him before, Alex, but what are your thoughts on this new lawsuit that has now come up involving him?
I don't know. It's absolutely disgusting. My thoughts, he's banned forever, and he's his legacy is forever ruined. So yeah, it's despicable and
rude,
just awful accusations. So I don't know what else someone could say about it. Is there anyone actually defending him? Is he just dead
no.
Right? He looks totally guilty. He looks guilty and deplorable. Another guy I don't like, but I can't get into politics. Yeah, he looks equally heinous and horrendous.
Right.
He looks equally heinous and horrendous as that other person I hate.
Well, you know what's happened is since this news came out, he officially resigned from the board of directors of the TKO company. And also he resigned as executive chairman of the WWE portion of the company.
Wow.
Basically, the only association.
I was just going to quickly say, you guys have seen, I mean, his physical appearance, too. He's just totally, like, skull and bones. Is he, like, sickly, or is it all the pressure? He looks,
No.
The steroids, the after effects of the steroids. He looks like he's a bag of bones in a suit.
Yeah, he does.
He looks very different from, like, a year ago. He's lost a ton of weight. I don't know if that's the stress or the anxiety, because, I mean, his world's come crashing down now a couple different times. This is just like the final nail in the coffin. I mean, he's just – his legacy is just destroyed.
Yeah.
You can't get any worse than that today.
And, you know, this is just another thing as well, too, here is – the fact that the WWE the WWE was losing the Slim Jim sponsorship as a result of this. But after he resigned, though, Slim Jim continued their sponsorship with the WWE. But still, you know, there was the possibility that had he stayed on with TKO, they would have suffered potentially even more losses.
Right. Spots are going to drop like flies if that guy's associated with the name brand. They want as far away the hell from that company as possible. They want nothing to do with him now. He's a pariah. He's tarred and feathered. He's done for life. They don't want him anywhere near that name brand now.
Because you're right.
I mean, all the sponsors will leave if he's still associated with it. Most of them would.
Right. So, and the rumor is that he may be Chris Benoit from the company. And what I mean is, anybody who remembers Chris Benoit, he was known for the double murder-suicide, where he murdered his wife and son, and then he committed suicide himself immediately following those two murders. And he was basically scrubbed from WWE's entire history, where... you know, they still have him on video because you can't remove video, but they removed all mentions of his name from articles, from the video. Like when they, you know, when they have him on a certain part of a video, they'll remove any single mention of his name whatsoever.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, it sounds like they may do the same thing with Vince McMahon, which is even more, you know, it's even more dangerous. I guess dangerous isn't really the word, because he's been a huge on-screen figure with the company since maybe the late 80s all the way till as recently as 2021, 2022. So... if you're going to remove him potentially from the WWE's history, you're going to be scrubbing a whole lot of history, including, you know, like, for example, the whole entire years-long feuds he had with Stone Cold Steve Austin, among other things. But all merchandise and everything has been scrubbed from WWE's catalog. You know, it seems like they're going through a lot of damage control, and it's funny that this story breaks literally 2 days after they announced that huge Netflix deal that got them $5 billion from Netflix for Monday Night Raw beginning next year, beginning in January of 2025.
Yeah.
And that'll go on for the next 10 years. And not to mention, it's also the same week as the Royal Rumble. So you have two major WWE either news stories or events going on. And then you have this break. And from what I've been told that this story was not supposed to break for at least another month.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted that under the swept way under the rug.
Well, not under the rug, but more along the case of, you know, not having it be, not having it disrupt, you know, big events.
Yeah, no, I misspoke. So rather than they didn't want to bury it, but they just didn't want it to come out. The timing was horrendous. They knew it was going to come out,
right.
But they were just trying to delay. They delayed damage control. They wanted to just keep it at bay, but it was inevitably it was going to break soon. But timing's never good, but this is really bad timing.
Yeah, for example, imagine if this news broke during WrestleMania weekend, for example, the biggest event in sports entertainment history. You know, imagine if this news broke during WrestleMania weekend. I mean, they would rather have it break during a regular week as opposed to a pay-per-view week. And in this case, the same exact week that the Netflix deal was announced. Mm. And by the way, this may actually set a new industry standard. You want to talk about live sporting events. Netflix has been wanting to get into live sporting events. You could see Netflix dive potentially into more live sporting events besides the WWE after this deal.
Oh, yeah. No shit.
Like, for example, you know how the NBA's contract is up with TNT at the end of this year, at the end of this season. Don't be surprised at all if you see Netflix jump into the jump into the sweepstakes alongside companies like Amazon and ESPN and whatnot.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, what a just disgraceful, just lapse of, you know, his reputation and all of that history. McMahon was such a huge figure in that sport, in sports in general. What a massive fall from grace now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It also brings back some promos that they did in the early 2000s, where he had a feud with his daughter, Stephanie McMahon, and Stephanie had said something along the lines of how he used her. In business meetings with some of his, with some of his business associates, and that she would never forgive him for stuff that he put her through. It makes you wonder how much of that was actually true, or how much of that was just for WWE purposes. Not just that, but also the heavily rumored relationship that she had with Macho Man Randy Savage when she was a teenager.
Oh yeah.
You know, it makes you wonder.
Wow. Yeah, Vince's been pretty shady for a while, but now it's really – the last couple of years have just really done him in, man. The reputation is just absolutely destroyed for eternity. No other way to put it. It's just laughing at how horrific it is. And there's got to be more skeletons coming out of the closet, too. Where there's smoke,
yeah,
there's always more fire. There's probably 1,000 stories that are going to start dripping out one by one now.
And we have an official winner of the Royal Rumble. Cody Rhodes becomes the first ever back-to-back winner of the Royal Rumble since Stone Cold Steve Austin did the feat in 97 and 98. But, yeah, you know, when it comes to, Vince, you know, former WWE star Ryback actually spoke out about this, saying that he's known about this stuff for many years, ever since he got, ever since before he got fired from the company.
Yeah.
And obviously, of course, he hasn't been able to say things because I believe he was one of those people signed to a non-disclosure agreement.
I was going to say.
By Vince.
A pretty common thing, Wolf, to the mightiest, that the most powerful tend to be the shadiest. And they love having people sign up. Like, you cannot talk to a reporter. You can't even talk to your neighbor or your brother. You cannot tell anyone about this, what you're seeing. Yeah, they always sign NDAs, non-disclosure. Yeah, I'm sure Vince McMahon was a big user, someone who utilized that a lot, made a lot of people sign that stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, it just – basically what Ryback said was that there's a lot more that's going to come out that's worse than this. And basically that Vince McMahon's days are done.
I don't agree with it.
Vince's days are done. And among other things. So it's, you know, it's definitely,
wow.
It just makes you think of what else may possibly come out. I mean, there was also a report from Wade Keller of report that came out from Wade Keller, one of the big wrestling journalists, that said Vince isn't even allowed to see his grandkids.
Ooh.
Grace.
You know, apparently he has been estranged from his family for quite some time, so to speak. His wife has been separated from him, even though they're technically still husband and wife. His wife has been separated from him for a couple of years now, ever since learning about this relationship that he had had. Yeah, it's basically everything has fallen apart for him. So, regardless, from what it looks like here, Cody Rhodes wins the Rumble. Looks like he pointed to Roman Reigns, so it looks like we're getting a WrestleMania rematch for the second straight year of Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, as Cody looks to finish his story, so to speak, and win the title that his father was unable to win in his WWE career. His father, of course, being the late Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty Rhodes, yes.
But, you know what? We're going to end the show we have a few minutes left, so we're going to end the show right here, I think. I want to thank everybody for calling in tonight. Thank you to Lou, Alex, Diane, and, Chris for joining me tonight. We will be back, of course, next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly.
If you want to say the end of the game here.
Huh?
We got a hot game here. Warriors and Lakers in double overtime. And Stephon just did a three with there's still a few seconds left, but this is quite a game.
Warriors are up again?
Warriors are up with 4.7 seconds to go, up by one.
Whoa. Good call, though. Yeah. I might have taken the Warriors. That's a battle.
What a game.